Welcome back. Today I'm talking with Karen Gross, the author of Breakaway Learners, Strategies for Post-Secondary Success with At-Risk Students. She's a former lawyer, law professor, presidential education policy advisor, and president of Southern Vermont College. Lots to learn from this one. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Karen Gross is the author of Breakaway Learners, Strategies for Post-Secondary Success with At-Risk Students. Karen is a higher education consultant based in Washington, D.C. She serves as a senior counsel for Finn Partners and sits on the advisory council of the Penn Center for Minority-Serving Institutions at the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education. Karen was the president of Southern Vermont College for 8 years and senior policy advisor at the U.S. Department of Education while President Obama was in office. Additionally, Karen was a tenured law professor for more than 2 decades. Besides being the author of Breakaway Learners, she also is the author of the award-winning Failure and Forgiveness, Lady Lucy's Quest, a children's series, and Teach Your Children Well. She also can be found frequently writing about educational issues in many journals, magazines, and reports, such as the Huffington Post, the Chronicle of Higher Education, and the Washington Post. Say hi to everyone, Karen.
Hello, nice to be with you.
Well, I appreciate you joining me, and I enjoyed reading Breakaway Learners. But before we delve into that, tell us a little bit about the 2 decades as a law professor. What did you like most about teaching?
Well, there are a number of things I liked about teaching, and I appreciate that many people are not particularly fond of lawyers. But legal education itself is a remarkable intellectual exercise that helps you to think better, to solve problems better, to sort facts better. And I think the part of teaching that I liked the most was seeing students progress, learning laws like learning a new language, and seeing them get that language over the course of time was remarkable.
That's excellent. I know that's as a teacher working with kids, that's a cool thing too. You get to see them get better and grow a deeper understanding and such. And so I can imagine that part.
Absolutely. And actually, importantly, and this ties into my book, the light bulb goes on for different students at different times. So one of the interesting things is that there are students who think they won't or can't get it, but you can convince them that they can get it. It's just that they'll get it at a different point in time.
I love that. That's awesome. Because that... I know that myself. Yes, it's one of those things where you go, suddenly the light bulb goes off a little while later, and you go, now, why didn't I think of that while I was in the room with everybody else? I like that. That's cool. So also I want you to comment just a little bit. You know, you were president of Vermont College for 8 years. What would you say was part of your focus while you were president?
Well, my focus at the college was very clear. The college enrolled 70% first-generation students and approximately 50% Pell-eligible students. These are students that most people would term, quote, vulnerable, which is a term I do not like, and thus the word breakaway learners. And my goal was to find a way to help these students not only access college, but succeed in college and progress to thoughtful careers after college. And so I saw the institution as a vehicle of opportunity, not only for the students, but also for their family.
Excellent. So just as a note, I got to ask you this question before we go any further. What's it like being president of a college? I mean, I have no concept of that. I work with college presidents and their staff. I have one associated with my work, but what's that like?
Well, first of all, you were a high school principal, right?
Yes,
so
correct.
You have some sense of what it's like to lead an institution filled with students. I would say that the job of a college president isn't actually a job. It's a lifestyle. It's something that consumes both your personal and your professional life. It's 24/7, 365 days a year. because whether you're doing work on campus or you're meeting and greeting people at events or you're food shopping, you are still the president of an institution and have an obligation to do it proud, day in and day out and every minute of every day. And I think the other thing I'd add is that I think I had 8 years of sleepless nights worrying about students, the age of college students, even though some of them at Southern Vermont College were older, is an age at which students are vulnerable. They can make decisions that lead to untoward consequences. And so I would wake up at night worrying and wondering whether they were all safe. I did not want to be the president who had to call a parent or guardian and say, I'm sorry, I regret to inform you.
I understand that, that's for sure. They had my share of, didn't have to make the phone call, but had to participate in activities associated with where students made poor choices. That's not exciting. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because that's something that, you know, you think of the title of president, and you know, a lot of times the president, I've attended different colleges. A lot of times you get to know deans and you get to know the president is over there.
I wasn't a president over there. I was a president right there.
Very cool.
Deeply engaged in the day-to-day life of the institution and the lives of students.
That's awesome, because in both of my son's colleges and universities where they have attended, you've actually been where the president has come up to you and said hi, and I'm like, and they're like, that's our president. You're like, oh, that's cool. So that's neat. I'm glad to hear that. So let's use that and just kind of segue into your book now. So let's get into Breakaway Learners. Could you start by talking a little bit, and I heard you mention it just a second ago, but let's go into a little bit of detail about what you mean by the title Breakaway Learner.
So for me, the title is designed to get at the fact that for many students, there is not an expectation that they will progress to post-secondary education. And one of the concerns that I've always had is that we diminish their challenges and we treat them as a society as if there's something wrong with them. We operate off a deficit model. And so my goal was to come up with a word that had power to it and that wasn't negative and that spoke about the enormity of the challenges, but the possibilities that exist. And so the term I came up with is breakaway learners. And it applies to students in colleges, in graduate schools, and actually all across the pre-K through 20 curriculum.
Oh, that's excellent. And I like what you're saying. You're finding a term that's not negative, and it looks at that idea that there's not something wrong with them, which too often that's what terms do. They kind of label people as if you should have this label on you as you walk around, whatever it may be. So I like that.
It's not only the label that's bad, by the way. It's how we treat people. And so we treat them as if they have a deficit, which we can fix by pouring programs onto them or resources or something. And it's a deficit model. And the idea is if you can fill the deficit, you fix the student. But the truth of the matter is the student didn't ask for the deficit. The student didn't do anything to contribute to the deficit, whether it was caused by big T or little t trauma. And so it's the job of the institution and the teachers and the professors to find ways to teach the students that they have.
That's excellent. I like that. I think we're going to get into that a little bit more as we talk in just a minute about something you said in one of your chapters. So what I'd like you to do is kind of just for a minute, let's pause just a second and talk about who the target audience is for breakaway learners and why an educator would want to know more, especially like right now they're listening to us. Why do they want to keep listening?
So the book is intended for everyone who cares about education. And that would include teachers, professors, parents, administrators, policymakers, politicians, people in think tanks. and people who want to improve the lives of those who may not be at elite institutions anywhere across the educational landscape. And the second part of your question was really about what's the point of it? What am I trying to accomplish here? I'm trying to find a way to enable student success. And to enable student success, you need to change the paradigm. The way we've been doing it hasn't been working. And so my hope is that through this book and through a new word that's invented in the book, I can help students and correspondingly their families succeed and truly lift a generation.
Very cool. So let's use that, because you actually just mentioned that term. And in the preface of Breakaway Learners, you introduce us, the reader, to the term elasticity. And you explain it a little bit further in your book. Could you go ahead and just give us a little snapshot of what you mean and how it fits within your book, you know, kind of the whole world around elasticity that you're creating in there?
Sure. So I've been convinced for a really long time that existing terms like resiliency and grit and perseverance and mindsets are not fulsome enough to explain what we need to enable student success. And all of those, resiliency, grit, mindsets, and perseverance, are focused on the student and what you can give that student as a skill set. Elasticity, instead, is a process, a kind of way of thinking about what happens to people when they experience trauma or toxic stress or abuse, or are first generation or have other educational hurdles that they're surmounting. And it comes up with a way for the institutions and the teachers, professors too, to help those students. And so elasticity, the word itself, is made up, but it's based on existing words, elastic, plastic, and lastic. So those three words are combined to create a make-believe word that I hope will enter our lexicon, elasticity. Why are you laughing?
I'm only laughing because what I like is the fact that it's a made-up word brought out of some other words. And what I like is where you talk about it in the book, and that's what I'm laughing about, is the idea that, you know, if you use it, you create the word, it's going to will stick. And I'm sorry, those are my words, but I like that. So thanks for sharing that part of it. And I interrupted you, so did you want to share some more about it?
Well, elasticity actually isn't static. It's a process. And so one way to think about it is all the elements of elasticity work together sort of like a mobile that's moving. And at different times, you can activate different parts of elasticity. But what's central to it, what's central to all of elasticity, its major feature among its five foundational pillars, is reciprocity, which is the exchange that occurs with trust between educators and their students.
You know, I love this because it's, first of all, the word sounds like it already exists. And
yes.
That's what I think is cool, because if you told somebody that you made up the word, they would go, no, I know it's in the dictionary. Okay, go find it.
I hope it will be someday.
Yes, and that's what I was kind of chuckling about, as I'm thinking about those comments about that, because I can easily see somebody going, no, I know that it's there. Go ahead. I'll find it for you. And it's not. But I like this thought here, because this really leads into this whole idea about as the reader gets into your book and starts understanding about your focus and your focus on the kids and who they are and understanding who they are, I think it fits really well, and I think it works well. So kudos to the development of that word.
Thank you.
In the chapter, Who Are Our Students Now and Into the Future, you note The problem, simply stated, is that many educators want to educate, whether consciously or not, their clones, rather than assessing how to educate the students before them. What do you hope the reader will take away from this section?
So I hope the reader will take away two things. I think the first is that I hope they take away the importance of educators learning about who students actually are, not who they want them to be. And I also hope that it signals to parents that whomever your children are, there is a place for them within education, and there's a way to help them succeed. So children don't have to be perfect. College students don't have to be perfect. And wherever you come from and whatever baggage you carry with you, in other words, if you have just a briefcase filled with troubles or a steamer trunk filled with troubles, there are institutions and people who can enable your success.
You know, I have to make a comment here, because part of what you're talking about is kind of cool. When a student just finds that happen for them. In my case, you know, I was at a major university and it wasn't working. I'm like, the classes were too big and I'm not connecting with the professor. When I tried to connect with the professor to see if I could get some help, I had to give my student number. She didn't know me by name. She knew me by student number because of the tests and stuff like this. And it's like, wow, okay. If you don't know me at all, and I have to give you my student number so you can look up a number about me, then there's a problem here. And I transferred to a smaller university where I kind of connected with a couple professors where, you know, you're able to spend that time there, help you to understand what you're confused about. And that right there is something that I'm going to lead into with that next chapter that I love. But before I go there, I tapped into this comment in this section that you made where, you know, too often we get into this idea that what we really want is we want kids who think and see the way we do. I mean, you use the word clones, and I think that is so powerful right there, because I think we can make that mistake in the classroom so easily.
So I think, without thinking about it, we teach the way we learn. So if you're a visual learner, you teach in a way that encourages visual learning. If you're an auditory learner, you teach by giving lectures. If you're a reading learner, you teach by assigning buckets of reading. But the truth is that students learn in many ways, and some combinations of ways. Some are kinesthetic learners, some are auditory learners, some are visual learners, some are speaking learners, some are reading learners. And so a good teacher has to teach not just how they themselves learned, but how students learn. So you have to teach to all kinds of learners, not just the learner you were yourself when you were a student.
That's awesome. And that is, it's so right on the money. So I'm going to use that to lead into one of my favorite chapters in your book, is chapter 7, which is titled The Untapped Power of Plasticity. And in this segment of the book, you comment, children whose brains have changed can have those changes mitigated or rerouted if they can develop stable relationships within or outside the home. Can you talk a little about plasticity and about rerouting changes?
Sure. I think this whole area of plasticity, which grows out of neuroplasticity and neurobiology, which are new fields relatively, is an effort to signal that our brains have enormous capacity to do workarounds. And the easiest way to think about it is, we know that there are people who've had, for example, brain injuries, and yet their brain finds ways for them to recover their capacity to speak and to understand and to problem solve and to see even. And so one of the things that we know is that from infancy onward, trauma, toxic stress, and abuse change the brain wiring. They literally change your brain. But instead of seeing that as, oh my goodness, you know, life is over for these kids, what plasticity tells us is that there are ways you can learn to do other things. There are ways you can change, notwithstanding the brain changes that occurred. And so for me, one of the most glorious parts of education is finding ways to enable students to learn, even if they've experienced hurdles or trauma or toxicity or abuse along the way.
You know, and I have to say this because part of what you say in there is this whole idea of developing these relationships. And, you know, it's like when you look at some of the things within the public schoolhouse in the K through 12 levels, you see the same sort of thing. If whatever's gone on in the child's household, that's why it's so important that the adults in the building figure out how to connect with the kids, because they can help overcome all that stuff you talked about.
It's true across the educational pipeline. The observation that kids are impacted by both person-made, nature-made traumas or family issues, including kids with high ACE scores, which measures the level of trauma, whatever is the cause of the trauma. If there is reciprocity and a trauma-sensitive school and people who are trained within that institution to help students, it is possible to have success. And let me just note two things, which you raised earlier, which is students often don't know people within institutions and they don't know who to go to, or they're too scared to go for help. And so I want to just share two things I did when I was a college president. One is I had an open door. You could walk in anytime. You didn't need an appointment. And outside my door hung a piece of art that had these words in bold letters: speak. Because I wanted students to know you can just come in and speak. And the other thing that I did with the dean of students is that at the start of each semester, she and I would hand deliver cookies, home-baked cookies, to every residential student on campus. And we would literally walk up and down. It took 2 days, two evenings, up and down and up and down the floors. And not only would we give away the cookies, but we'd ask students questions like, what can we do to make your life better? Or is there anything you want to tell us? If you don't have anything, that's fine. And if you want to tell us something later, that's fine. But we're here. And many funny things happened at those walk-arounds on campus. I could write a book about those. But what they did is they opened a door to communication and reciprocity that I think changed how our campus functioned.
That is so cool, because I know, you know, that in my own story, the large place that I transferred from to the small place, the president there, she made herself very, very accessible. And what was amazing was she had connections to very popular in people at the time. And this dates me, but I mean, as a result, we had entertainment that were some of the top music people, and she'd be there listening right along with us, and as well as comedians and stuff like that. And you know, it was cool to see her in and amongst you, because, like, you know, I love that sign that you had outside your office, because so often that's not exactly what you think that the administration of a college wants. Instead, you think they want you to be quiet and go do your thing, and you're kind of a separate entity that exists on the campus, whereas I have to go play with the, you know, the people who are going to donate to us or something like this. And I'm not so, I don't mean to be stumbling through this. I just kind of think that is an amazing thing, because it kind of would make you overcome those things as you connect with somebody who's delivering you cookies, which is cool.
It's actually what hung outside my door is one of the many images in Breakaway Learners, which has images by design to help people see what I'm writing about.
Oh, that's excellent. That is excellent. I know this really isn't fair, but do you have a favorite part or section of Breakaway Learners? What is it and why?
So I would tell you, actually, apropos of my last comment, that my favorite part of the book are the illustrations. Some of them were done by a young person who's a Breakaway Learner. Some are things that we did on campus. Some are pieces of art, like Speak, that hung outside my door. Some are representations of elasticity with a mobile. But I think my favorite illustration is of something called kintsugi pottery. And kintsugi is a Japanese form of pottery that when things break, they get put back together with gold. And so the idea is you're not broken, you're repaired to be more beautiful than you were before. And when you look at kintsugi pottery and you think about the message that it's sending, it should give hope to all of us who've experienced trauma so that we can navigate forward. And in the ebook version of the book, all of these images are in color. And so when you look at the kintsugi pottery and see the gold that meshes the pieces back together, you get the understanding that one isn't broken, one is better for one's life's experiences.
Oh, that's awesome.
Even the negative one.
I gotta say the whole part about the pottery, that really, because I remember those images, and that really makes a huge connection when you understand a little bit more about the pottery and what its meanings are. So awesome.
By the way, it's a gift I give to many people, kintsugi pottery, if they've had a hard time and are on the road to recovery, whether that's physical illness or psychological illness or some hurdle in their life. And I give them a piece of kintsugi pottery and say, look how beautiful you are now. It's remarkable.
That's excellent. Love it. Well, as we're kind of wrapping up, tell the listeners where they can get, where they can pick up a copy of Breakaway Learners.
So Breakaway Learners is available at the usual outlets like Amazon and Barnes and Noble. It's also available at Northshire Books, which is one of the largest independent bookstores in the United States. There's a website, too, for the book, www.breakawaylearners.com. And there's on that website a way that your listeners can find me. They can comment, and I get those through the web so they can reach out to me. And there's another interesting way to get in touch with me. There's something called Vialogs. Vialogs are presentations that one makes where listeners can actually comment, and the person who gave the presentation can comment back. So I did a presentation on Breakaway Learners using Vialogs at Columbia Teachers College. So that's available, and people can see me talking about the book and comment actually right then and there to what they're listening to, and I will see those comments and comment back with pleasure.
Excellent. And I'll make sure that there are links to these different ways to get in contact with you, as well as to the book's website. So, and the Vialogs, are they at your website?
The Vialogs actually are at the Columbia Teachers College Gottesman Library website. And it's a remarkable tool, actually, for ensuring that events aren't one-off, that you don't just give a speech and it gets archived somewhere. You give it, and there are opportunities for people to engage with you on a go-forward basis.
That's excellent.
What more can you ask for than that?
That's excellent. Continue the discussion there. I like that.
Yes.
Well, awesome. I will. I'll find links and put them in my show notes so that people can find that. So, as we draw to a close, you know, one of the things I like to do is to ask my listeners a couple of questions about working with teachers and teachers that have made a difference in their life. So, if I could, if you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers, and they haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
I think I would tell them to get to know their students and know who they are and where they come from. I would also suggest to them that they take the ACE, Adverse Childhood Experience test, so that they know themselves, where they came from. Because if you understand yourself better, you can be a better teacher.
That's awesome. I like that because it's you're so right. You know who you are. You can understand them. I like that. So the last question, do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
So I should tell you that I'm a really firm believer to going back to teachers and professors who have helped you along the way. So I actually have done it.
Oh, cool.
I have two teachers, one who's since passed away. She taught English in the high school I attended called the Buckingham School. And she and I stayed in touch throughout my entire professional career until she passed away. Another of those teachers is now one of my close friends. She is how I learned to speak Spanish. And one of my children's books was translated into Spanish and I read it to children in Spanish. And I thank her every time I do that.
I love it. That is awesome. It's the impact of people on our lives and those people who are teachers. And I kudos to you for taking the chance, taking the opportunity to reach out and then stay connected with them. That's very cool. I like that because too often we don't think about it until it's too late.
Well, one of the nicest parts of my life now, I guess I'm old enough and gray enough, is that students actually come back and say thank you for something that happened 20 or 30 years ago. And just to leave on a wonderful anecdote, I was at a vacation spot in South Carolina, and I hear this voice from across the room, Professor Gross. And I see this grown man with his wife, and he said, I thought it was you. I just have to tell you how nice it is to see you again. And his wife said to him, go be honest. Tell her that you keep the chart she made in class with you in your drawer and you look at it while you're practicing law. Go tell her that because I know about you and I've never met her. So those for me are moments of real joy that I've had an impact on the lives of students.
That is so cool. That is because that's exactly why we teach right there. So
why I write, and it's why I write children's and adults books.
That's awesome. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you sharing Breakaway Learners with us, and I encourage my listeners, you gotta check it out and go take a look at what she's talking about and see if it'll help you change what you do. Best wishes, Karen, and take care. Thank you again.
Thank you. Very nice to be with you. My pleasure.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and hosts. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends. Take care.